Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back. It's a Friday episode.
Woo!
We're just burning through this week, man.
We've been trucking, man. Short minutes.
Yeah.
Well, 60 well, seconds.
60 yeah. seconds, but...
Short content.
Compared to the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
Or the last 3 weeks, really. This is a... Still, you know, important part of the story, but less dense mm-hmm. in terms of action and in terms of dialogue and in terms of, like, relationships between characters.
Yeah.
But, hey, man, we have Gurney Halleck back.
Oh, Gurney's back.
All of the men were ugly, but Gurney was the ugliest amongst them all.
He was, a rolling ugly man. Yeah, man, it's good to have Gurney back. Love a Josh Brolin on screen. And we start off with Gurney. We start and end with Gurney this week. We're starting off, of course we're talking about minute 89 through 90. Also crazy to think that we're covering.
We're an hour and a half into this movie.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
And we still have another hour of more than an hour of movie time.
Yep. Woo. So, Gurney finishes shouting his mine from yesterday, and he's not talking about possessing something. He's talking about an explosive mine, John. I know we were thinking he was calling dibs on something.
He's calling dibs on the mine.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then he dives out of the way of this thing. So this metal panel that we saw yesterday. That is hurtling towards the harvester is apparently a mine.
Yeah. So I'm just going to dive right into Art and Soul.
Go for it.
So it is a magnetically driven mine designed specifically to incapacitate vehicles, but not to kill people. Yet it almost kills Gurney Halleck had he not dove out of the way because it would have smacked the shit out of him and killed him.
I also think if it doesn't kill them, it definitely knocks them down. The other smugglers that when this one eventually explodes, spoiler alert,
sure,
20 seconds from now.
Yeah, I mean the concussive blast of any explosion will knock someone down, but
now
it's not. I think what they're going for is that it's not. You know, the Fremen aren't building these mines to be and act like landmines where you step on them and they explode.
Sure.
They pop out of the sand and they're magnetically driven to the treads or the parts of the harvester to incapacitate it.
Right. Now, this is science instead of science fiction.
Yes.
Because these exist in our world today. Maybe not flat panels like this, but when you talk about sea mines operating in a very, very similar manner, magnetically drawn to the hulls of ships. They're usually stationary. They're, you know, just tied down to one spot.
Yeah.
But there is a magnetic, function to them that will draw them into the metal hulls and, you know, explode on contact at that point. So yeah, cool. This is just science. This is not science fiction.
I'm just imagining in my head, the scene from Hot Fuzz where, where they go to the farmer's house because he's been, trimming the neighbor's hedges.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, do you have a license for that gun? For this one. And then they open up a cabinet and it's just full of guns and there's just a big rusty sea mine. And they're like, what's that? Sea mine. And he hits it with the barrel or with the butt of the rifle and it starts like ticking and they're all just like, ugh. I love Hot Fuzz so much, dude. It's one of my favorite movies. I could minute by minute Hot Fuzz.
Ah, that would be fun. Everybody and their mums packing around here. Yeah, like who?
Farmers.
Who else?
Farmers' mums.
Farmers' mums.
I'm not going to minute by minute Hot Fuzz.
No,
I love that movie too much to fucking subject myself to that.
What's your birthday? February 2nd.
What year?
What year? Every year.
Out. When's your birthday? April 27th, 1969. You're 37. Yes.
Out. That's so good.
But yes, so these mines from Art and Soul are designed to incapacitate vehicles only. They are not like the traditional landmines that everyone thinks of.
Sure.
So, you know, good on Denis for, you know, doing that, I suppose.
Yeah. Not really covered in the books, at least this part.
Yeah.
So this seems to be a Denis invention.
It doesn't detract from the story.
No, absolutely not.
It's science fiction based in science. Mm-hmm. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything wrong with science fiction based in fiction, but, you know.
Yeah. So it clamps itself to the side of the harvester tracks, and Gurney dives for cover.
Yep.
And the mine explodes.
Well, he dives for cover because it's going to hit him.
Yeah, yeah,
and then it snaps on to the treads.
He takes more cover at this point. And yeah, it just takes out this one like track of treads on the harvester. And this is where a few of the smugglers get knocked down by the blast as well.
Yep.
From the radio.
Well, our pilot, we're looking in the cockpit and we see him kind of turn and he goes, east, east.
Yeah.
And Gurney Halleck, being the fucking badass that he is.
Oh, gosh.
Shoots a very rapidly moving target and blows up this one mine.
Yeah, so we get another mine that's like, you know, zooming in from the east, and he just like quick gun up, tracks, shoots.
Yep.
And that is a hella impressive shot, by the way.
Yeah.
Because he knows the rule, you gotta lead your target.
Even if you have a laser gun.
Yes.
There is a very, especially when it's moving that quickly.
Yeah.
You still have to lead a little bit. So
this is something that the ornithopter door gunner from earlier in the movie did not know about. He was consistently shooting about 4 or 5 feet behind Paul and Chani when they were running.
Or maybe that was just plot armor.
Oh, yeah, it was plot
deflecting armor. The bullets. Yeah, let's be real.
Yeah, super impressive shot that Gurney takes. And it looks like a third mine is coming from the same direction.
Similar direction.
Yeah.
But it sneaks past and attaches to the other set of treads.
Yep.
Blowing up. Yep. Now, before we continue on.
We get a better shot of the explosion in this one.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you went through frame by frame, but they do the cool thing. And they've done this before in this movie too. I'm thinking specifically of when the spice silo just outside of Arakeen was detonated. VFX does the right thing with the explosion where you can see the shockwave permeate before everything else.
Yeah. It's really cool.
And love that attention to detail.
Yeah. It's really, really great. And it only takes out the tread.
It does.
Which is cool.
And before we step away from this wider shot, did you get a chance to look at the harvester in that wider shot and everything? And I'm specifically talking about its treads.
Yes.
So it's a very interesting configuration.
It's like I'm not remembering that. There's like three sets of those treads.
There are three sets of treads all in a triangular shape.
Right.
You have, obviously, the rounded, you know, vertices on the triangle. Sure. You have the treads in the front and the treads in the back of this set of three. Mm-hmm. Are with the fat part of the triangle, the longest part, the hypotenuse, as it were, along the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second set of treads is inverted, with the hypotenuse being parallel to the ground, but elevated. So the top vertex is just like tiptoeing itself along the ground. And I'm looking at that and I'm just like,
detail. No,
why? Like, it looks cool. But it seems like such a waste of energy for such little contact on the ground.
So I'm sure there's something to be said about surface area and drag maybe on the ground. I don't know.
I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a... Yeah,
that's really weird. Doesn't matter. They're blown to bits now.
It's over.
Yep. The spotter at this point has a brilliant idea, and he says they should get out of there.
Yeah.
So we should get out of here. This was a rocket, correct? This was not another mine that attached up top.
Yeah. So we hear one of the many workers shout incoming, and we hear rockets coming from off screen. And Gurney Halleck looks up and we see a fireball erupting out of the carryall, which is, you know, separated itself fully from this harvester at this point.
Yeah.
And it is not doing well.
No.
We then cut back to the ground and we watch more Fremen launch more rockets, and an even larger fireball, you know, erupts. Gurney returns some fire.
Well, hang on. We're skipping some bits. Gurney's given him instructions. And he says a very Gurney line. He says, "Don't run, fight."
Well, that's what I was getting at. He says that
before he returns fire, though. He says that right after the explosion, before he returns fire.
That's right.
Yep. And the fire that he returns to the Fremen, notably less accurate shots.
Yeah. No, it's like at the ground in front of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, was this just like a warning shot? Which would make zero sense.
Yeah, because they've blown your shit the fuck up.
Yeah. You know, just the him being able to snipe that mine out of the air, and then...
But he can't hit a stationary target?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which seems to be like a lot easier of a shot. Yeah, that was a little weird inconsistency for me.
On the comms we hear, "We're in deep Fremen shit." And that's when we have our further explosions of the carryall.
Yep. Yep.
And Gurney looks up and all he has to say is, "Holy mother."
Yeah.
And the carryall is just fully on fire at this point, beginning to fall out of the sky. And the music starts cranking up like crazy. The flaming wreckage passes over Gurney and he draws a sword, which is such a fucking cool shot.
Oh, sure. Well, he's got to have his action hero movie scene where, you know, the explosion happens around him and he's just casually walking.
He is the sword master Gurney Halleck, after
That's
all.
That's right.
And in addition to being the sword master, Gurney Halleck also gets the honor of having the two PG-13 allowed fucks.
That's right. That's and, right.
And as it's falling, we just hear him go, "Fuck, fuck." And the carry all hits the ground. Gurney is notably by himself with his sword drawn, and he's, you know, still withholding the same, you know, discipline and training and marching movements of his Atreides past. And as soon as he like starts going out onto the flats and everything, just a bunch of Fedaiken all appear.
Oh yeah. I tried counting and I got up to like 15 and I was like, okay, I can't really see anymore. But so dozens of them, it seems like.
But there's one that's in particular very close to Gurney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both physically and emotionally. That sweeps his legs out from under him and knocks Gurney straight onto his back.
Yep. Goes to show how well they can conceal themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just fucking right there. And this Fedaiken like hops up on his chest and he's going in for the kill blow. And he doesn't.
No,
he just kind of stares at Gurney's face for a second and we get some heavy breaths.
Well, we see Gurney on his back looking confused for a second because he's like, "Why am I not dead?" And then our last shot is on a very familiar set of eyes.
And it's important to note that Paul here.
Spoilers.
Paul here has his face covered, everything except for his eyes.
Yep. He's got the larger stillsuit mask underneath a turban.
Yeah.
Not unlike what we've seen other Fedaiken do in the other harvester attack scene.
Right.
One thing I wanted to point out about the Fremen and their ambush, and this is actually something I meant to point out earlier in the week when we saw the Fremen with the telescope. I think, and this is another thing that, as far as I know, is a Denis invention, but it helps make sense of the world a little bit. The Fremen use like cloth and blankets almost to help hide them underneath the sand.
Hmm.
So with the Fremen that we saw with the telescope peeking out. It was just the telescope and like the tips of his fingers, right? And then you could see the cloth over both of them.
Yeah.
And it would stand to reason that they use that to help mask where they are in the dune without being too obvious or anything. The sand can naturally flow over that, but then they can create like a little space underneath the sand where they can store their supplies. They don't have to worry about getting up to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
So who knows? They may be, you know, hiding out in the desert for hours, days, weeks in those spaces.
Yeah, that's fair.
And if all you have to store is just a little bit of food, which as we've seen is mostly just like jerky.
Beef jerky.
Yeah.
Slig jerky.
Yeah. Well, we don't know for sure if it's slig jerky, but yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Right. So that's good.
Yeah,
they kind of use these like fabrics to hide under. So it's the Fedaiken in their little hole, the fabric, and then the sand on top of them. And we'll see more of it next week, too.
I'm only thinking of the Saddam Hussein hiding spot drawing. Cool.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, not too far off. John, I promised you a hot, steamy dump of book notes.
Yeah.
And I'm ready.
Go for it.
Okay. So.
I was going to say lay it on me, but.
So, this cadence, and so this chapter of the book, you know, they don't use, chapter numbers in the book, but, the chapter that starts off with Gurney's reintroduction is a long chapter. And it's got a lot of really good information in it, stuff that we will talk extensively about in coming weeks.
Yep.
But the portion that we have covered today is only about two and a quarter pages.
Okay.
Of the chapter. So it starts off in a very, very similar way. Gurney is writing in the factory. They just call it the factory. And they have a complement of ornithopters with them, which is not something that we saw in the movie. We are only seeing the carryall and the factory.
Well, we've seen it with the Harkonnen.
True.
Mining situation. So
yeah. The only reason I bring it up is because they play a different role here, or they play a bigger role, I should say. So, you know, they're just kind of scouting. They're not exactly sure where they're going, but he spots what looks like a spice rich bed, sends one of the ornithopters over. It does its like little scouting. They say that the ornithopter has a sensor that's dangling from it. That they can detect like the spice on the surface.
Kind of like the sensors that we see on front of the harvester
right.
In Dune Part 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So far, making some adjustments, but the movie is still staying in line with the book.
Yeah, I think it is. So they find this patch, and it's not necessarily in like open, flat, or open dune desert. It's kind of tucked in between some rock faces, basically like a mini shield wall. It's kind of in a rock outcropping.
Is it described as juicy, juicy?
No, that does not come into play here.
Ah.
That is purely in the movie. So he remarks that this area, like he's like, I gotta remember this area because this would be a good place to, you know, stash some supplies if we ever need to, need to come back here or whatever. So, he gets them to set down. He's going to march his men in on foot, and they're going to bring the harvester in from a distance because they can't just put it directly down, on the patch. As they're kind of like getting ready to start this, The harvester or the harvesting of the spice, that's when the Fremen attack. So it plays out just like it did in the movie. So they barely get on the ground before the Fremen attack them. And notable difference in the book is that it is 12 rockets that erupt from the Fremen rocket launchers instead of just like the two that we see here.
I think we see like close to 4 or 6, but yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. There's quite a few that go off to take out the carry-all.
Sure. So when Gurney says, "Holy mother," like that, that's actually in the books. It's an abbreviated version of what he says. So the full thing that he says is, "By the horns of the great mother, rockets. They dare to use rockets."
Why couldn't we get that in the movie?
By the horns of the great mother. What horns? Is that a bull thing?
Could be. But bulls are male, so.
Yeah, we don't know if solution bulls.
Yeah.
We don't know if the females have horns then, but whatever. So the fight is really, really quick.
Yeah.
In the books.
As it is here.
Yeah. I mean, it is like a paragraph. because as soon as the rockets explode, Fremen pop up and we're right here. And we get the same encounter, and that is where I'm going to end book notes, because we start getting dialogue at this point, and we've not got dialogue in the movie. So yeah,
we're gonna open up with dialogue next week. But yeah. You know what? You're going to have to wait through the weekend for those episodes to come out.
That's right.
Well, Zach, how are you feeling about this week? What's your shy halud at?
I like this week. It's a simple week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of back to basics a little bit.
I think yesterday's episode, not a lot of like interpersonal relationship. There's some action, but nowhere near as much as we had, say, between Lanville and Fade. And
right,
you know, there's no new character introduction, but we have the reintroduction of Gurney Halleck.
Yeah, we get some Fremen or not Fremen. We get some smugglers introduced by their job titles, not really by names. So it is, it's a good week. We get some Balisette playing, we get some harvesting. We get some
awesome Balisette playing.
Yeah, we get
unfortunately our only Balisette playing.
Yeah, I know. We get some cheeky lyrics from Gurney. That was fun.
Still suit is full of piss.
Yeah. So I think I have no other course of action, but to give this a solid 6.5.
That's where I sat as well.
Okay, cool.
So
it's not like lore heavy minutes are always going to have or be higher on the scale. If the characters on screen invoke the Dennis system, we're always going to give that a little bit of a bump.
Yep. Glow globes are always an automatic +1 bump.
Yeah, that's true. So we don't get any of that on screen, but just for a solid week of minutes, 6.5 feels right.
All right. I can get behind that entirely. I thought it was a awesome week. You know, having Josh Brolin in any movie is always a pleasure, but especially having him as a very gruff Gurney Halleck.
Yeah.
And we're going to see Gurney's evolution even more throughout the rest of this movie, because guess what? He's also going to fall down that Lisan Al Gaib pipe.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If you think the Fremen are fanatical, just you wait. So, no, I'm excited. We're an hour and a half in, and we have an hour left, and there's still a lot of Dune to talk about.
That's true.
And I think this is where, you know, the movie and the writing for the movie really starts to put the pedal to the metal in terms of things needing to really happen, because... like I said, we've got an hour left and we got to wrap this bitch up. So,
I think we can officially and confidently say that we are in the third act of the movie at this point. Leaving Gedi Prime felt like the movement into the back third of the movie.
We're in that weird lull between acts right now, going from 2 into 3.
Sure.
I think, you know, because we don't have the big time jump that the book has, it's a little more complex in terms of deciding what is where.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, our long lost friends are returning and
we're getting the A-team back together.
The boys are back in town, so to speak. So
I don't know if you noticed it, but in one of the scenes, kind of towards the end of this minute, kind of off in the distance, we saw the end of the, like the tail end of the A-team van sticking out of the sand. Oh, so
it's back, baby.
Yeah, we're going to be able to you know, revisit that.
That is a Dune Minute deep cut.
Listen to season one.
Episode 55.
We said a lot of that.
Or 60. That's when it first came into play, though, was when they were going out to see the spice fields.
Yeah, that's true. All right, cool. Well, we will be back next week. If you would like to reach out to us, we are on bluesky@duneminute.com. We are also available via email if you'd like to reach out that way. And our email address is duneminute@gmail.com. We will be back next week for more conversation between Paul and Gurney. Finally.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time.
That's right. All right, we'll see y'all then.
See ya.